Beloved, you are now tuned in to Three Black Men, a podcast by three black men where we talk about theology, culture, and the world around us. The following content may not be suitable if you ain't real enough. Listener discretion is advised, because real recognize real. Here's the hope when we look familiar.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Robert.
Sam.
And I am Trey.
Hey, we are the three black men. But if you're on Patreon, you will see that we are the four black men. Now, we've recruited someone else for the podcast permanently. So, no, but I am really excited because we have author, scholar, theologian, one all-around great person, Dr. Drew Hart. Welcome back again to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. I thought, you know, once it was the second time, I thought it was going to be a shift from
I
didn't make the cut quite yet.
Yeah, the Canva file with the logo and everything is on somebody else's thing. I couldn't get the logo updated at the time. So
It's coming. Yeah, just keep waiting for it.
There it is.
No, but we're excited to talk to you because, I mean, one, just to talk to you in general. We are fans of yours, but we are talking about hope all season and just exploring the contours of hope, how we imagine it. Barriers to our hope, et cetera, et cetera. And so, hey, no better person than Dr. Hart. And so I guess I want to open up with, you know, in thinking about hope and the undergirdings of it, how would you explain what you are hoping in right now, especially in light of we have an election season that is It is, you know, and there's so much going on in the nations, right? You know, we have everything going on in Gaza. Yeah. What are you putting hope in right now?
Yeah. What am I putting hope in? Well, just this morning, one of my students asked me what I was hopeful for. And I said, well, I wasn't hopeful for that much. But what I wanted to communicate to him was that I wasn't optimistic, right, about the landscape, around where things are in our country, where the church, that's what we were talking about in particular, the status of the church broadly. Certainly there are communities, and we can get into that, that do provide hope in another way, but what I put my hope in, I do think for me, like the very starting point for thinking about hope, and where my hope is placed and what bounds my hope is, we just hit Easter. And I do think about the significance of the resurrection, precisely because, like, that is a context where, like, despair is reigning, where empire has crushed the Messiah, where people are going back their own ways, feeling like they've lost, right? And I do think that hope can't ever be separated from despair, right?
Okay, you're preaching.
but I do think, like, yeah, it can't be separated from despair, but it also, like, there's something powerful about the fact that then in that moment, as we place faith in the resurrection of Christ, is that empire does not have the last word. That the death dealing powers that sometimes we give a lot of power to and feel like they have the last word aren't ultimate. That, like, even, you know, if you think about the systems of oppression, anti-blackness, all these things, like, it's easy to ascribe them almost a godlike status, right? That they're eternal, that they're permanent, that they're ultimate in our lives. And I think that the resurrection says otherwise. It says that that they don't have the final word, that they are not gods, that they are not eternal. And I think for me, that is a starting point. I mean, there's a lot of other ways that I think about hope, but I do think for me, that is the starting point, is to say that it's a reminder that the systems, the structures, the ideologies, the MAGA, right? The wars, the underfunded schools, like, these are not permanent things that just have to persist. And that's helpful for me to remember that they're not ultimate and they're not gods, and I'm not going to give them that power, right? Yeah.
Hey, and feel free to jump in, fellas, comments, thoughts. But I'm really curious, is how are we, do you see distinction, and any of y'all can answer, but, like, do y'all see distinction between optimism and hope? Because I love that you kind of said that you're not optimistic. Right. And so how are we looking at that? Because I think most people use it synonymously.
Right.
And, you know, what y'all think, you know, what?
I think there's a distinction in that when you look at optimistic, that is how you are seeing things, right? Like, mm-hmm. opt is in there. It's what is seen with the eyeballs, whereas hope is often something that you have to hold on to. It's something that is felt and grasped at. Sometimes you got to seek after hope a little bit, right? And it's easy to do that because I think there is a lot of overlap between hope and optimism. But there are people who can be optimistic by nature without necessarily grounding themselves to a particular hope. People who always see the glass as half full are not necessarily hopeful in any one particular thing other than trying to keep pessimism at bay. Where you can be somebody who is realistic and viewed as pessimistic by people, but still hopeful in the fact, like you said, like, oh, when I'm looking around right now, it looked like we down, boys. Like, it looked like we taking L's right now. I ain't gonna lie, they had me in the first half. And that can sound like a pessimistic view or whatever, but the hope is that what we see right now is not all there is, right? So you can be hopeful about something even as you acknowledge that, no, I don't like what I see right now. I don't like this at all. And my hope is in the not yet. My hope is in what I am hoping. I don't like using the definition in the actual, I don't like using the word in the definition, but the hope is in what we are believing is around the corner or is yet to become. Whereas optimism, a lot of times, is just us determined not to see that which does not make us feel good or serve us well in a given moment. I don't know if I'm making sense right now.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to frame that. Because I, like, before you started talking, I was thinking, like, I try not to put hope in people, right? Like, I just genuinely don't associate my hope in folks. I don't. But I can be optimistic. Right. And I don't have a problem being optimistic and thinking, like, man, I'm about situations involving, you know, different things. But just for me, hope is so much more sacred and deeper for me to, like, freely relinquish hope on people. Because what Trey said, it's something that you have to cling to. You have to hold on to it. I can let optimism go. But it's history has taught me sometimes that in relinquishing hope freely, trauma can come. So I tend to guard my hope and keep it in what Dr. Hart was saying about the resurrection and looking and seeing that, you know, these systems and these things aren't God, right? Like, and there is my hope, that Jesus is true, that God is real, those things. So, yeah, that's sort of how I distinguish those things.
Yeah.
It's
Go ahead,
interesting,
Doctor.
Sam, because yeah, and I agree with you in terms of, you know, like putting hope in people. But then there is a strange way in which I do feel like, and one of the things I tell people is, but hope can also be embodied, right? Like, so I think about like in my neighborhood, all the things that, so I live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 50% Black, large Latinx community as well, all the things you can imagine historically that happened to a city in the Northeast, right? The red line and all this stuff, right? But when I, one of the things that talk about, maybe it's the opposite. So it's not placing my hope, but it's catching hope, right? Which is that there
Hey.
are folks on the ground organizing, right, around funding for public education. There are folks on the ground, MILPA, right, here in Harrisburg, working for undocumented immigrants, right? There are folks on the ground. We just had a Gaza ceasefire pilgrimage, right? Like, so there's a way in which people can, we can actually, both someone else and we can embody hope, which can be contagious for others also, right? Because the practice is that we've had the capacity to perceive other possibilities of this world, right? And to practice that right now and to strive after it and to fight for it and to be, you know, and that in embodying that right underneath the nose of empire, people can see that and can also be invited in to this new life, right? This counter, this alternative option that was always available. Sometimes it, our imaginations are restricted for what's even possible because the despair and resignation has so creeped in. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious. Can I be honest? Here, you know, because you, I like
Lie to
this.
me, lie to
Yeah, a
me.
lot to me. Okay,
Lie to me.
Nikki Giovanni. I, you know, in thinking through this dynamic of hope and optimism, I can't help but think of Easter Sunday, and I'm glad you brought that up, Dr. Hart. There's this pain and this tension within me because I think about the reality of what happens for those of us who Resurrection Sunday did not come.
Right.
And I think it's a painful place that I do especially want to get your opinion on since you're here, because we are in a time where even in the past 2 months, there have been a number of, let's, for example, Black autistic young men that have been killed or who are having any type of mental crisis, or those of us who don't feel safe to go into church and to
Yep.
celebrate, the blood never fails, Jesus Christ has the final word, and we know that we are mourning, right? And the Resurrection Sunday did not come for us. And so how would you address that? And like, how would you speak to that, for those of us that hope is in short supply and resurrection is not part of our story right now?
I mean, I think it's precise, like, I don't think that, you know, it was how many people on Easter Sunday preach these triumphant messages, right?
Yes,
Of
and this
Easter,
is why I'm
right?
asking, brother.
Right. A lot of triumphant kind of, oh, we Christ has conquered. He is risen, right? It's this very triumphant thing. And that's why I guess I was saying earlier what I meant when I was saying like hope and despair are so bound together,
Yeah, I
right?
like that.
Because I don't think we even understand hope outside of despair. Like, it's not for, like, you know what? You don't understand hope unless you first tasted despair, unless you're there in that space. Because the hope, again, that's why I separate the hope from the optimism, is this is not that things have necessarily turned and things are all better, right? But it's daring to one, to not resign and ascribe power to the systems. It's refusing to have an imagination restricted so tightly that we can't even imagine other possibilities, right? And it's the practice of embodying that other thing in community with others, right? Like for me, all of those things we can do and still feel despair and also cling to this hope that that's not the final word and wrestle with it, right? That's what I always, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention. There's, you know, a lot of scholars kind of talking about Afro-pessimism. I don't know if you've picked up
yes,
on that.
Yes.
And I wrestle with it, you know, because on one hand, I'm like, it's sounding kind of true, right? Like the permanence of anti-blackness, right?
Yeah, there's points to the room. I'm like,
they're not making this up. It's deeply embedded, not just in the systems and structures, but even in the psyche of people, right? And how they make sense of the world. And so when they say it's permanent, I'm like, they've got some evidence that they're pointing to, right? They're not making this up out of nowhere. And so there's a part of me that resonates with those arguments. The only difference for me is that I feel like I can't ascribe that much. I can't give them anti-blackness godlike qualities. I can't, I just can't go there. I just refuse to give it that much strength and power, to give it ultimate status and permanent status, right? But the evidence that of how deeply it's interwoven, that's despair. This is not going away easily, right? But that doesn't mean that it's permanent for me, right? And that's where I struggle. But I do think there is that despair that you gotta kind of grapple with and be honest about, and kind of be comfortable swimming in, because without tasting that despair, I don't think we even understand Christian hope.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on a major point right now, because if I were to theorize right now, right? Like if somebody would have called me from the Huffington Post or something, a random interview, be like, oh, do you have any theories as to why church attendance is trending in the way that it is? One of the things that I would probably say is that we are not honest enough to make room for the fullness of the human experience. Like, we love the stories of triumph and the triumphant messaging. And I want to be clear that I do think there's a place for that in our story. I think that is a necessary thing to do. But at the same time, when that is all that we make room for, when you do feel despair, you feel as though you are somehow less than, that there is something broken in your discipleship. And one of the things that does is it isolates you. Oh, if I'm not...
Yeah, you're preaching, brother.
Like, I'm not here right now. What that means is I need to take a break from this community. I don't want to dampen anything else there, right? And we find ourselves isolated in that moment. And I say that because I was in a setting in my local church context not too long ago where somebody was really vulnerable and asking, like, yo, I hear all of these stories and all of these testimonies about how God came through for people, but that's not my story right now. Like, I'm mourning the death of XYZ in my family while I'm still trying to deal with this loss from years ago and everything. And I don't, where is my resurrection? And what was interesting to see is that a lot of us instinctually rush to this place where it's like, yeah, but, right? And one of the things that I'm learning in this family therapy setting is this dialectic way of thinking, where instead of yeah, but, it's yeah, and.
Right.
And I think that you hit on something so crucial when you're like, oh, the Christian hope is intimately wed to despair. Right? The resurrection is powerful because it happens after the hopes of the people in this Messiah were dashed as they saw this person nailed to a cross, breathe his last, put into a tomb, right? And the thing about the Christian story that is so powerful, but if we don't sit with it long enough, it kind of loses that edge, is that our hope is in the reality of resurrection, not only the resurrection that already happened, but the resurrection that we're still waiting. Because there's still a whole lot of things to feel despair about, and that's not a character flaw. We do that, right? Like that's natural. That's part of what it means to be human. That's part of what it means to believe in the possibility of better. And when those hopes, those dreams are not fulfilled in what seems like a timely fashion, or worse yet, when they seem like they're being actively destroyed and ripped apart in front of our very face, like despair is a very natural reaction. And that's something that I think what the reality of incarnation, if there's truth to the story, as I believe there is that God is intimately aware of that emotion and that feeling as well, right? God becomes what God loves. It's the story of the incarnation. And so as we try to push those things to the back of our mind, to the edges of our communities, to make room for all of this hope and this triumphalism and this celebration, I think that we are in some way, in trying to redeem the fullness of our humanity, we're accidentally dehumanizing ourselves in some other very important ways.
That was a lot. Yeah, this is important. I mean, thank you y'all for going on this thread. It's real to me, and I'm glad for this conversation because, you know, full disclosure, I had a brother staying with me who is like a brother to me over the past couple of days, and he just lost, you know, just had a second miscarriage, him and his wife, right? And so I'm thinking of how can I speak hope that isn't, because I was thinking this as you were talking, Trey, part of the dehumanizing that I think happens is we assign, you know, mourning, for example, in the Easter story, we're like Friday, you know, that's when you could mourn. Okay. And then Sunday is up from the grave, he rose again. But my friend is looking at me, you know, the past couple of days, and I'm thinking, yo, how can I address the macro and the micro griefs that he's suffering? I don't have the answers, right? And so I think that leads me to like this next question and thinking about the contours of hope is like, what are something, like you talked about the ultimate hope, right? But like, what are some other undergirdings that you would say when you're thinking about the Christian hope specifically, like what are some other threads that are undergirding this thing, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, that's what, so the other thing would be then, I mean, is that what I was talking about, the embodied practice.
Yes. Right?
Like for me, that is essential, that there has to be people living into something else. Like if ain't nobody living into it now, then in some ways it's of no good use, right? If it's just some future by and by thing, then that's not meaningful. And so now it can look a whole lot of different ways. I remember when just a few years ago I was in Cape Town, South Africa.
Okay, flex.
But it was so deeply encouraging for me because, well, that was that you guys remember the time when in the U.S. it was just the same things happened, just in a new form now. But back then it was critical race theory, right? Critical race theory is the enemy, right? Now it's,
well, it's the same. Now, now it's just DEI. Woke. Now it's, yeah, DEI, now it's DEI, right? And woke.
Yeah.
Okay, but right, yes, I hear you, brother.
Right, critical race theory,
that was the boogeyman back then. And so I left this continent and went there, and I was asking people, I was having conversations, just asking people like, you know, what's the conversations around reparations? What's going on? And it was beautiful, the kind of conversations that were happening, the kind of energy and frustration. Like there was frustration with the politicians and stuff, but it was almost like, at least this was what I took away. I was like, it's in the air. It's, you know, like reparations is coming. It's just, it's going to burst through eventually. That's how it felt. And that was really encouraging precisely because of how despairing, you know, things were moving along here in the States. But it reminded, like, you know, we're not alone. And there's folks struggling against white supremacy and colonialism and these systems and cycles of violence all around the globe. And I remember, who's it? Vincent Harding. So I mentioned my youngest is named after Vincent Harding. So Vincent Harding, his book, There Is a River, right? The book is about, you know, the struggle and the resistance to slavery from the beginning all the way to 1865. But at the very beginning of the book, he gives this metaphor of the river and says that sometimes, you know, it's flowing like Mighty River, and other times it's just little drops, right? It's just a little trickle, but it's always there. There's always a river flowing, right? And in some ways, you know, this is the metaphor for the human spirit that's struggling for liberation, that's struggling for freedom, that's struggling, you know, just the human spirit that just won't give up, right? And I think that that's a beautiful analogy also when we think about, even in our different contexts, the ways in which, you know, there are all, like, yes, there's the MAGA story, but there's also other counter stories happening on the ground, right? Yes, there is Zionism and all of that that's pushing, you know, this horrific genocide and ethnic cleansing in Gaza, but there's also simultaneously something else happening from below. And I think that for me, the embodied practice, people who actually show up, who are actually advocating, who actually show other ways to be human with others, right? Care, giving, receiving, sharing life, all of that is that embodied practice and living into something in the right now, even under the nose of empire. I think like all of that is part of hope and a necessary aspect and dimension of hope, that it can't just be, you know, in the sweet by and by. It's got to be lived out right now.
I want to make sure, Sam, I didn't know if you're about to ask a question, but you can. Okay. Can you give, yes, so you gave some concrete examples of like the embodiment. How, I'm wondering, how can we practice hope like daily? Like if somebody were to ask, like me right now, what is like, yeah, what's something I can practice in my daily life to embody hope?
Yeah. I mean, some of that is contextual, right? But I think so. In a, obviously here in the US, we have a hyper capitalistic society that values people based on productivity, right? So, like, what does it mean to find some Sabbath and rest and be present and in community with others, by yourself? Like, I think like it's a whole bunch of different ways, right? So it's not, but it also can be organizing, right? And showing up in the public square. And it can also be, you know, participating in your neighborhood. Like one of the things I've been deeply invested in here in Harrisburg is around issues around funding for public education, right? And there's been movement, and I'm not at the forefront of it. There's other folks who've been at the forefront of that, but I've been glad to participate in struggling for equity for, because in Pennsylvania we have one of the worst school districts as a not school districts systems for just distributing funds for public education, and it's extremely racist. I know it is everywhere, but Pennsylvania was actually worse than most places. But over the past 10 years, like there's actually been change because for the past 10 years, people have been faithfully pushing this one step after the other, bringing change. And like that invites others. Others have been invited in and have been participating. And so it's like living into a counter witness, an alternative way right now. So again, in some ways, it's limitless, right? Like how, what we can do, but some of it is us having the capacity to dream of like, what's God's dream for us? Our full humanity, to be fully human. And how do we both, in ways that we're able to embody something else, but also strive after something else that does not exist right now, right? And to not have our minds constricted to, or resigned to just the way things are. So I think, like, I imagine you probably come up with just as much, if not more, right? Ways that we could all find that humanity back and live into God's dream for us, even in the present. And that's the kind of work that we could do in community with other folks to help dream and inspire and dare to dream, right? Of other worlds that are possible.
Yeah, and I like the example that you used about Sabbath, because I think part of like being able to practice hope for me looks like honoring my body weekly, but not even just a Sabbath. For me, honoring the fact that I am not, I say this to myself all the time, like I am not infinite, and reminding myself daily, like, and loving myself enough to say it's okay when enough is enough, when, hey, maybe, I'm in a PhD program, so there's this ever
Oh my gosh.
like encroaching cloud that you should be studying, you should be reading, you should be researching. And I have to remind myself that no, I'm not a beast of burden. I have to love myself enough to lay down, to say, hey, I know I have 5 more hours of studying to do, but the mind is done, and so yes, a weekly Sabbath, but also day to day,
As a way of
knowing
life.
where, yeah, as a way of life. And so kind of embodying Sabbath is my way to practice, like, okay, I'm living for the day where the resurrection will give me a little more bandwidth.
I agree with that. It's funny because I just posted on Threads this weekend. I had me some me time. I put the kids down for a nap, had me some quiet time, and I actually painted on my porch. I
That's
threw
beautiful.
on Beyonce's Cowboy Carter, and I just did me a little painting, and I was in my own world for like, the hour and a half, and it was great. And I'm learning that the more that I take time to reestablish my humanity, right? I'm finding it. It's almost like scripture reads different now. It helps me to reimagine even the way that I meditate on scripture, because I feel like it's unlocking parts of my imagination that had been bogged down for so many years. You know what I'm saying? Like just being thrown into from an early age, being forced to institutionalize to a sort of capitalistic way of thinking, yet your imagination eventually kind of wears down. And so it's almost like it's releasing creative juices are flowing. We've started doing different art projects around the house. Quani already has like the Cricut and stuff, so she likes to do things, but now like we've made key rack, we've been doing the mats that you wipe your feet on, like just different things to express our creativity and just tapping into that imagination. Watching my kids play, they have such vivid imaginations, and sometimes I get a little jealous. I'm like, man, I wish I had the freedom of imagination to imagine those things even now as an adult, because I couldn't. Who knows, what could happen. But things like that, those things, and get hope there. That helps to undergird my hope, along with seeing people in action. I know they're about to ban that app, but one of the things that I appreciated about that app is that it gave people on the ground a voice. It people that are experiencing genocide, it gave them a voice, right? It gave them a face. It gave them a name, right? It gave them, it brought
Did you mean
humanity. It brings
TikTok, by the way?
humanity back to it. Say what now?
Which app are you talking about?
TikTok.
Okay. I was like, are we not allowed to say
Sorry,
that? I was
but
like, is
they're
Russia,
about
are
to
you
ban
listening? What's happening? Okay, okay.
it.
But go ahead, brother. You're making really good points. Go.
Well, it gave people voices. It gave marginalized people voices. It made sure that their face and their life matters and counts. Despite the propaganda and different things that we may see or be taught to believe just because of a theological space they were in any given time. So, seeing, people on the ground, still trying to love and care for their community and their family, things like that help to undergird my hope, in real, and then going back to scripture and realizing like these things, like you said, Dr. Drew, they're not eternal. They don't have God-like qualities, right? They come to an end. And God shows us that in Jesus, right, in his resurrection, taking us back to Easter. So I love this conversation. This conversation itself is actually helping to undergird my hopes. I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about.
And I love you talking about creativity. That's so beautiful. Because I think, right, it's easy to not imagine that a part of this resurrection, what the dream, right, of God's dream for us. And as you were talking, it made me think about Alice Walker's In Search of Our Mother's Gardens, right? I mean, this beautiful vision
Reach
of,
the text,
right,
yes.
like on one hand, like the ways in which oppression tries to smother and crush creativity, and yet fully can't, right, on one hand, but also the ways in which it wasn't allowed to fully be birthed the way it ought to have been, right? And so our ancestors had restricted ways in which they could express, but it's still beautiful and powerful. But I just love the image of you out there on a porch, painting and being creative. And I think that's the kind of imagination, the fully human imagination, that is all encompassing all of who we are, in that really beautiful way. So that's really cool. That's dope.
It's so freeing, and honestly, I really hope and like I really pray that for everybody, for real. Just, but it's, I don't know that I've ever it, like I that was the first time I'd ever done anything. Like, I haven't painted like that since I was in school. So to have the freedom, right? And I was telling Kwani, I was like, man, the thing that I love about the painting is that I painted it, and that was the first time I did something and didn't second guess it. Right? It freed me of that. And so I was able to just go with the flow, and whatever it came out with, it was just me, you know. And I just able to pour myself out like that. So I like I'm tearing up about it, but I that's just freeing. So I really pray that you know people really get to, because it's so hard, like you said, Dr. Drew, in a society. And I'm sorry I cut you off, Trey. In a society where like we get bogged down, man. And I didn't understand. Like, I'd heard, and we've talked about it even on the show, but even now, man, it's heartbreaking, because I'm really starting to understand like how much of creativity is snatched from us, how much of it is suppressed in such a way that unless our creativity has a purpose of productivity or it can be monetized in some way, it's not useful. And that's just simply not true. Like, our God is a creative God. God created the heavens and the earth. Like, Genesis talks about this. Yet we have a creativity that, like, it's supposed to be free. And I think there's so much hope that can be found there. But there's a lot of stuff we gotta work through, man. There's a lot of stuff we gotta work through.
Yeah, y'all are really preaching to me right now, and I'm gonna tell you why, right? Because this conversation took an interesting turn. But Rob, you asked Dr. Hart if he had any tips on how we could practice hope on a daily basis, and I could watch it in your face, Dr. Hart, when it happened. Like, man, I don't know how to answer that question. What you mean? He said, and I watched the wheels turn, and you said, "There's okay, the Sabbath principle," and we talked about organizing, and then, we get to the part about creativity and everything, and it reminds me of this conversation that I had with my sisters, right? I was working through Kat Armas's devotional recently, Sacred Belonging. Phenomenal work, by the way. And she talks about how John chapter 1, verse 1 in Spanish, which was her first language, is rendered differently, right? En el principio era el verbo. Excuse my bad accent or whatever, but basically, roughly translated, in the beginning was the verb, whereas in English, it's typically in the beginning was the word. And that really tripped me out because it talks about the action. Right? Well, that's how we would re render that Spanish translation in English. And I was sharing that with my family and my sisters. One of my sisters, she don't go to church. She be thinking about God a lot. And she was like, yeah, words are just symbols. We're trying to communicate things. Like, when you talk about the Logos, mind you, my sister, she didn't go to seminary. She don't do the Greek thing or whatever. She was like, yeah, you're really talking about the intention. I said, what in the world? And it blew my mind. And I went back and I plugged it into the scripture. And if you look at it, if you look at the Logos as the intention, the divine intention, it comes out as, in the beginning was the intention, and the intention was with God, and the intention was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made, and without him, nothing was made that has been made. And the intention became flesh and dwelt among us. And one of the things that grounds us in hope on a regular basis is this intention. Whatever our intention is, whether that intention is to rest, whether that intention is to organize or that intention is to be creative. Because you was preaching, Dr. Hart, you said that these systems do not have godlike power. We refuse to give them to them. But one of the things that does have godlike power is us, right? We were made in the image of God. And so if the intention was there in the beginning with God, and we are intentional about what it is, that we can ground our hope in the intention, because the intention is not only with God, but it is God. That's how things come into being, through that intention. And so you really helped me, Rob, when you asked that question to set it in motion, because it was speaking to me. And real quick, I just checked the clock. We're not going to wrap up the conversation yet. Don't breathe too easy, Dr. Hart. I'm not going to let you go. We paid for that time. We paid it to the Lord, by the way. It's stored up in heaven. That's where your treasure will be.
Treasure's in heaven. Got to be.
But we're going to put a pause on this conversation. We're going to break it into another half, because we got some more questions we want to ask you. Before we do that, though, because I don't know what these people's time is like, I do want to give you an opportunity to let people know where to find you, how we can support your latest projects, because I know you got a lot going on.
Well, still teaching at Messiah University and working. I'm the program director for something called Thriving Together Congregations for Racial Justice. So we're working with local communities, churches, a cohort of 12 congregations actually at a time, go through a 2-year process. And so that's taken up a lot of my time, but I'm still doing some public speaking and other public scholarship work. And you can find me on Inverse Podcast with my brother, my brother from another mother from Australia, Jared McKenna. And then you can also find my newest work. So most people know about my books, Trouble I've Seen, Changing the Way the Church Views Racism, and Who Will Be a Witness, Igniting Activism for God's Justice, Love, and Deliverance. But my most recent book is a more academic book. And I say that with a little bit of sadness, if you can hear it in my voice, because I like writing to everyday folks. But I did feel really good about the need for this project. It's called Reparations and the Theological Disciplines, Prophetic Voices for Remembrance, Reckoning, and Repair. And so I wrote it with Michael Barham, Gimbia Kettering, and Michael Rhodes. We're the four co-editors, and we got a collection of scholars, biblical scholars, biblical studies, theological studies, religious history, and we also even got some practitioner stories scattered throughout. And we're really just trying to push the theological disciplines, all of them, to take up the issue of reparations more seriously, and also have a resource that's accessible for leaders, pastors, and others that are trying to think theologically about reparations as well, specifically for Black Americans. And so, yeah, I'm excited about that project. It's only in hardback form right now, so it's a little pricier for those that don't have maybe a stipend or some sort to get it, but it will eventually come into paperback as well. So we're excited about getting that project out there into the world to support churches engaging in thinking about reparations and beginning to do that work, instead of talk about embodying hope on the ground, a different practice, and trying to strive for a different future is what we're all about.
We appreciate you rocking with us for another episode of Three Black Men. Here's the part of the show where we ask a favor from you. Now, earlier I mentioned a couple of ways that you can support us by joining our community over at patreon.com/threeblackmen. We have multi-tiered support options, and you can get bonus content. If you don't want to do that, you can submit a one-time contribution by finding us on PayPal at 3blackmenpodcast@gmail.com. But we ain't here to tap your pockets. Here's a few ways that you can help us out without spending a single dime. You can stop what you're doing right here, right now, and make sure that you've left us a review and a rating. Don't just give us the 5 stars. Go ahead and write out how much you love this show and tell everybody about it. Do it on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you at. Make sure you leave that rating and a review, and that's going to help even more people join the fun over here. Thank you so much. I knew God loved you for some reason.